Gamertag Radio presents E3 coverage. Hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo are direct from the convention center floor.
This is a Gamertag Radio exclusive.
All right, this is Paris. We're here at E3 2018. I'm here with Danny. I'm here with Pete. You'll hear from them in just a second. But we have a very special treat because I just played The Division 2. Yes, I played The Division 2, and I went directly to the source to get more information about it. So can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Julian Garrity. I'm the creative director on The Division 2.
Thank you so much for taking a little bit of time to talk to us. So like I said, I just had hands-on with it, and I kind of got to go back in time. Our listeners know this story. I went to the preview event for the original Division back in January 2016.
Okay, was that in Los Angeles?
It was in Los Angeles.
I was there.
So you were there, ironically enough. Okay, so I've been big into one of your competitors, shared shooter games, a lot of hours into it. So when I played the original Division, I had a lot of questions about the end game. What are you going to do for the end game? What is your roadmap? What are we going to see? And I was not happy with the answers that I got. So I did not play The Division at all for the first 2 years, just beta, and I kind of swore it off. Peter, which you'll hear from in a second, played it a ton. I did not start playing until a couple months ago. Well, once that 1.8 update came out and I fell in love with the game, I go, wow, they've really made a lot of vast improvements. I'm really loving what they're doing here. And today, with what you announced with The Division 2, and we have a ton of things we want to talk about, but I kind of want to skip ahead to one thing. You talked about the end game, and you talked about your philosophy for that, because I think that's kind of big with a lot of people that are hardcore into this type of genre. So can you kind of elaborate on your philosophy for the end game on The Division 2?
Yeah, I think end game is something that we've learned to perfect and to massage over the last 2 years of launch after The Division came out. This is the same team that's working on The Division 2, and we know how people play the game, and we know what people want to play. We know how to surprise people too. So coming into The Division 2, we didn't have anything else on our minds but how do we make a super diverse, broad experience for Endgame, where we cater to all types of players. Not only the Parises with the thousands of hours, but guys like me. I've got a family. I can't play violent video games in front of my family, so I have to get up at 6 o'clock. I'm not getting thousands of hours on any game. So how do we make a Endgame that caters to all types of people and has experiences in that buffet of activities that can speak to, I've got 10 minutes to play, I've got an hour to play, I've got 6 hours to play, that type of thing, and make every single session absolutely rewarding for you. So, that's the philosophy that we went in there with.
Okay, so now I want to go back to the beginning of when you did your presentation. So The Division 2 is in Washington, D.C. So a couple things on that. First of all, why Washington, D.C. versus what we got the first time being in New York? And you went over a few environmental things. You talked about disrupted nature. You talk about open historic sites, on and on. But you can say it better than I can.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect because that's my basic introduction. For gameplay reasons, Washington, D.C. is actually proposing a huge amount of variety. So when it's an open historic site, that's open spaces, right? When it's in nature, in a park, in a national park, Roosevelt Island, for example, well, that's a different type of gameplay too. So all of these things transform that basic combat brick of cover-based shooting completely, because you're going to treat an open historic site completely differently from when you're in the metro fighting in claustrophobic tunnels. Even your loadout's going to be completely different. And that's a huge advantage of Washington, D.C. over New York City, which is grid-like. It's huge buildings. It's monumental. It's iconic. I love it. But we're getting so much more out of Washington, D.C. Now, that's the gameplay reason. The narrative reason, is there any city in the States that represents the heart of America much more than Washington, D.C.? You've got all of these iconic locations that we're going to explore. the recreation of Washington, D.C., it's one-to-one with the real Washington, D.C. On top of that, the map is 20% bigger than the map that we delivered in for the Division I, for the first game. So we're getting narrative reasons, we're getting gameplay reasons, we're getting just pure aesthetic reasons too. And changing the season to summer allows us to play with a huge amount of things, not least the way that your character looks. So, you know, if you want to stand out from all the other agents, you don't have to wear a puffer jacket and a wool hat. You can go for some other looks there. And that's important to me too. I want people to be able to play an RPG where their avatar looks and feels like they want to look and feel.
So I want to go back to your endgame first philosophy, because that's something that I think resonated with not just us, but everybody else that was here in your presentation. Something for everyone, like you mentioned earlier. You know, if I've only got 10 minutes, I've got, you know, 10 hours, or I've got 10 days to play. What was the thought process up behind trying to hyper-focus the game, or how is it that you're able to hyper-focus the content for the player so that when I go in, I'm getting the maximum reward for what I'm doing in there?
So it's a tricky question because I'm not sure I understand it fully, but what was important to us is, just like the first Division game, the more you progress in your story, the more you progress through the adventure, the more you're unlocking, the more main missions, side missions, encounters, open world activities you're unlocking. So by the time you get to the end game, you have a huge wealth of activities to play around with. And that allows us to create a lot of different variety in terms of the time limit that you want to spend there. And each one, of course, there are going to be some different types of rewards. But the type of reward is always going to be rewarding for you. You'll get less for a 10-minute investment than a 6-hour investment for sure. And it'll be proportional. It'll, you know, we need to balance and we need to work on it. We need to get a few hundred million hours of testing in there. But when we do, it's going to deliver an experience that'll be rewarding no matter how much time that you spend in it.
So for someone that, like me, I started playing Division in the beginning for a very long time. Then I stopped for a while. Then I read about 1.8 update. I got super excited, started playing it. I felt at first like I didn't know where to go because I felt like there was so much content. And in a way, I was kind of lost. So when I started playing, I was like, oh, Underground. This is new to me. What is this? So for someone that's going to start playing the Division 2, is it there going to be a way that easier for us to understand where to go, what type of content, what, you know, because I felt like I was completely lost on the first one.
I love this question because, yes, to be honest, mm-hmm, I think this is one of the biggest plagues with this type of game. And I'm talking about other games within Ubisoft where fundamentally you jump back in and there's so many options that you're bewildered, right? Mm-hmm. So we're working on something, and this is the first time I ever talk about it because it's the first time somebody's asked me that question, which I think is awesome, by the way. It's a really smart, game design-focused question, so that's fantastic. We're working on something called a progression tracker. And the progression tracker, it'll be in your main menu, maybe when you boot up the game, and it'll propose activities to you based on what the next major milestone for your progression is going to be. So constantly, it'll propose activities, things to try, things that it knows that you like to play, to make sure that you keep on having something to play. Now, again, I don't think necessarily that it's the only solution for that problem, but we'll keep working on it because I love that problem. I want to solve that problem for players.
That is fantastic. I'm very happy to hear that. Now, since I actually did get to play the demo that you have here, I have to admit, I went into it thinking, all right, I know he's saying it's a little difficult and communicate with your guys. God, whatever. I'm going to be Billy Badass and I'll just run up here with my shotgun and take these guys out. And I'm thinking they're all going to be red bar enemies and they're all purple. And I'm like, oh, crap. And I had to run the cover. But I bring that up because it was not a mission. This was something that naturally can occur in the open world, but it felt like I was on some type of mission or it had like a bigger purpose within, yeah, the game. and was great because, yeah, we were communicating. We were taking advantage of that co-op experience. And, you know, when I was talking with some of the other developers after I finished playing, just some of the little tweaks that you've done from the original Division to what we're going to get here in Division 2 definitely stood out. And I understand this is, you know, still early dev, things can change, but it felt good. The weapons felt good. And one in particular that you guys are introducing into here is the specialized weapons.
Yeah.
So can you kind of talk about that? Because I didn't utilize it enough when I played in the demo and I was kicking myself when I was done.
Absolutely. I mean, just to refer to something you were saying, what you played is 0.4% of the game, right? This is a control point. It's located in a crashed Air Force One just in front of the Capitol. So it's kind of iconic. It's kind of grandiose. But that control point is one of the systemic activities within the open world. So that type of encounter, that's going to repopulate and pop up
right
constantly, constantly. It's not one of the encounters. It's not one of the side missions. It's not one of the main missions. It's just one sliver of activities. Specialized weapons, now that is something that, again, speaks to the end game first approach, right? You only unlock them once you hit max level, once you complete the campaign, and it's a whole new progression tree for your character. So we talked about three main specializations, which are sort of spearheaded by the signature weapon that we're going to give you. And that signature weapon could be a crossbow with different types of ammunition, a grenade launcher, a 50 cal sniper rifle. And these are super powered weapons that can really define your playstyle. But it's not just that signature weapon. The specializations is a whole progression tree that'll unlock, you know, specific and exclusive modifications for your skills, exclusive grenades, exclusive that type of thing. And then these aren't, you're not locked into a specialization once you choose it. You can flesh out all three of them and get to a point where you can mix and match different things to synergize with the other players on your team. And it's when you get that synergy in the Division, if you play, like, really play the game, and one of you is on Overwatch, another you is going in with the shotgun, that's when the game sinks for me. I never play it like that because I'm not a good player, but I've seen players do it. It's beautiful when it happens.
That is fantastic. Now, and I know I'm kind of hogging the mic here from Danny and Pete, but I have to ask this one thing because I had my pass out moment of your presentation. I'm sorry, Pete, I have to say it. You announced an 8-man raid is coming to the Division 2. I'm sure there's not much you want to give up on it right now, but I have to say, for me, who may have been playing one of your competitors, that particular type of activity was very key to me, which is why I spent so many thousands of hours in it. And the fact that you're bringing something like that to the Division 2 makes me very excited. And I don't know what can you, little bit of information, can you tell us about it?
You know, we wanted to deliver a raid, an 8-player raid, because we know that it's that kind of super hardcore activity that keeps players invested for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. That's the pinnacle of the experience. And we're talking about endgame not necessarily equaling hardcore. Forget that for raids. Raids are a hardcore activity. And this is, we're treating it as the ultimate activity. When you manage to beat that raid, and we'll deliver the raid, maybe not on day one, but maybe it has to be in the first few weeks, right, of launch. When you beat that raid, you're going to be rewarded with something that makes you stand out, that makes you, you know, signifies to the entire community, okay, these guys, they've achieved the impossible. And we're treating it like that. So there won't just be one raid. Throughout the first year, we're going to deliver multiple raids.
Oof. I wasn't even ready for that one. So one thing I wanted to talk about was a commitment to the post-launch.
Yes.
Can you go more over, you know, what we saw in the presentation, you know, year one updates and seasons and stuff?
Absolutely.
Say the major key point of the year one update. I've got to make sure you hit that.
I can say the major point of one update. To be honest, for me, looking at Division 1, looking at the first game and looking at the community and looking at how we can capture the community with continued support. And that's what we did on the Division One, and we're super proud of the job that we did. Thinking of, okay, what are our challenges for the Division Two? What we wanted to do is to create a whole season of content delivery. Mm-hmm. That whole first year, every 3 months, you get another drop. And that drop, that episode, it's going to have new areas to explore. So a map extension, which is a big deal. It's going to have new story missions, new activities, new features. We're just going to fill it with content, just like 1.8, where people have a lot to chew on. And it expands the content that we can use for post-launch as well. And each of those episodes, and there are going to be three major drops in the first year, completely free for everybody.
I know you guys received a lot of feedback from the first game. Throughout the year, throughout the months, you guys have been releasing different updates and stuff. I feel like this game is more inspired from the fans, because they were the ones that have been giving you the good, the bad from the last game. How important was it to get that feedback from the community? Because I know you invited them to the studio for the first game and everything, right? Yeah. So how important was that for you guys?
Hugely important. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that the Division has the best community team in the industry. I love those guys. They're doing a great job. And staying close to those guys and the community is super important to us. But you can't forget that we're all gamers as well. And we love this game. We love our competitors. I mean, Destiny, I love Bungie.
You said it, I didn't.
And we love those games. We love those experiences. So we created a game that we want to see, and we want to play with our community too. So it's incredibly important. And we'll continue doing it on The Division 2. I guarantee you we're going to change things, we're going to tweak things, we're going to continue to improve. It's constant improvement.
And just to elaborate on what you're saying, again, because I almost feel like I'm a new person to The Division and everything, because obviously I knew it was around, but I haven't really started to invest into it in the past few months. And I think what you guys do on Twitch, as an example, is fantastic. Giving those constant updates, what you've been doing with the global events, and I'm sure all that stuff's going to carry over to the Division 2. But I want to go back again to what that year one content being free. How important is it to you that no one in the community gets left behind as far as these updates go, where you have to worry about, okay, a third of the population has this, but the other two thirds doesn't. How do we balance it? And everyone,
it's incredibly important. That's why we're not doing it. We're not going to split the community like that. All of this content will be completely free.
Again,
there's nothing to say more than that.
Yeah, it really isn't. It really isn't. But I guess again, that's just the whole point, because we've already, the three of us have started talking about, well, what platform are we going to play on so that we can play together. And I think, when you talk about this 8-person raid, and you mentioned the fact that there's going to be that incentive there for whatever reward loot system that you do for that, that's very important. Like, it may seem like such a small or cosmetic thing, but trust me, having been playing in this kind of genre for the past 100%. Few years, it could just be a sticker on a helmet. But oh my God, you got that sticker because you finished the raid, and that is such a big thing.
So confirm stickers on helmets in the Division 2.
No, I want more than a sticker.
No, man, that's enough. Yeah. A little sticker.
But I just have to say, and I'll shut up because I know I've been talking too much, is I'm very excited for the presentation that you had today. I'm very excited for what I got to have hands on with. I know there's a lot more that you're going to be talking. We didn't even talk about PvP, the Dark Zone, any of that stuff. So I know that'll be coming down the road. But as an initial look, and like you said, the in-game philosophy of what you're trying to do, this makes me very happy, because it's a hobby. It's not just a game, because it takes an investment to play these kind of games. And I just want to be confident that my investment's going to pay off, and that I'm going to be, like you mentioned, you're going to be very rewarding, and you're going to be mindful of people's time in the game. And like I said, as long as you stick to that, you're going to make a lot of people out there very happy about the Division.
Absolutely. Team. And I love that conception of this. It's more than a game. It's a hobby. And I think that's a great thing to communicate to the team too, because there's a responsibility there.
All right. So launch date, I know you guys talked about it. My curiosity is, considering 1.8 technically just came out, very recently.
Yeah.
How long has Massive and everyone else been working on the Division 2 while simultaneously possibly working on the 1.8 and the progression, you know, the progression of updates?
Yeah, that's a great question. Again, the Division as a team is 6 studios strong. It's Massive, it's Red Storm, it's Reflections, mm-hmm. it's Ubisoft NC, it's Ubisoft Sofia, it's Bucharest, it's Paris with editorial support. This is a big, big team. It's a logistical nightmare to get, and that's not my job, right? I've got the easy job in the production creative director couple, but it's a tough nightmare to work out who's working on what. 1.8 was Red Storm's baby, right? Mm. So Red Storm worked on that super hard while Massive was working on. Just the conception of the Division 2. The Division 2 started the day that we finished the Division 1. We already knew we had certain things that we wanted to explore and push forward. So we've been working on it in parallel. Hardest thing I've ever done in my 20-year career in video games. It's balancing, okay, live plus the Division 2. It's a challenge, but it's fun, man. This is what keeps me alive, you know? I'm 62 years old. No, I'm not. I just...
Wow.
it keeps me young. It keeps me on my toes. It keeps everybody on their toes. And I think it's a great challenge for us.
Well, it's not a question, more of a request, because I listen to a lot of podcasts. Okay. So every time I go to the safe house, I listen to the Power Station.
Rick Velassi. Yeah.
So I hope you guys got added in there again, because that was a lot of fun listening to it.
I love Rick Velassi. I love it. It was born out of this idea that even in a situation like that, you'd have like just a crackpot on the radio who maybe 60% of the time would be completely accurate, and then 40% of the time just batshit crazy. Lizard people are there.
Yeah.
It's I love that character.
Yeah, it was dope. Really cool. No, but just want to say thanks for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Super excited. All of us. We're all excited, man. Release date.
March 15th, 2019 on Xbox, PS4, and PC.
All right. Cool. Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.